Palestinian civilians and asked the UN Secretary General for a protection mechanism for occupied Palestinian territory.
The result of the vote is as follows. In favor, 120. Against, 8. Abstentions, 45. Draft resolution A/ES-10/L23 is adopted.
The U.S. vetoed a similar resolution in the Security Council. Dozens of Palestinians were killed during protests along the Gaza-Israel frontier beginning in late March. U.S. officials will join talks in Geneva later this month on forming a Syrian constitutional committee. That's according to U.N. Syrian envoy Staffan de Mistura. He told that to reporters on Thursday, signaling movement in a process that had appeared at the risk of stalling. Leaders of the U.S. Republican-led House of Representatives are trying to craft legislation on immigration issues, the outcome of a truce between the party's conservative and moderate factions. The fate of thousands of young undocumented immigrants in the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA, is at stake. The bill, taking a conservative approach to legal status for DACA recipients, may not have enough votes to pass, and the so-called compromise bill is still being written. Republican Representative Carlos Corbello.
We said from the beginning we want the House to debate immigration reform in a serious, meaningful way, and it looks like that is happening for the first time in nearly a decade.
Votes on immigration bills could be held as soon as next week. Bad weather has forced a migrant rescue ship in the Mediterranean to take a detour on its journey to Spain. The group SOS Mediterranean tweeted out Thursday, quote, "The Aquarius will sail along the east coast of Sardinia to avoid bad weather and preserve the sick, exhausted, and shocked survivors of this untenable situation." Spain agreed to take in the vessel with 629 migrants left in limbo after their weekend rescue off Libya's coast as Italy and Malta bickered over who should take them in. World Cup excitement has begun. Host Russia is taking on Saudi Arabia in the opening match happening right now. Fans decked out in national colors created an electric air of anticipation near Red Square earlier in the day. The World Cup will be played at venues across Russia until the final on July 15th. I'm Liz Palka for VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Hayes Wuhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We feel that it's very important to highlight what's happening to adolescent mothers in education because they are a highly invisible group in government policies.
That's Ellen Martinez, author of Human Rights Watch, a report on African policies towards pregnant teens and adolescent mothers attending school. Details coming up.
Also, Muslims around the world are preparing to celebrate Eid al-Fitr after an extensive Ramadan fast. And democracy is at work in Zimbabwe as the country goes to the polls on July 30th.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Today is a big day for sports fans. VOA's Sonny Young fills us in.
Sporty World Cup greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. The 2018 World Cup football tournament officially kicked off Thursday in Moscow, Russia. Russia is hosting Saudi Arabia in the opening match. The first two African teams, the Pharaohs of Egypt and the Atlas Lions of Morocco, will be in action Friday. Egypt's head coach says Liverpool star Mohamed Salah, injured last month in the UEFA Champions League final, is almost 100% certain to play against Uruguay, and the Moroccans will meet Iran. I'll have special World Cup reports at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC.
South Africa has suffered its second deadly mosque attack in just over a month, shocking a country that prides itself on religious tolerance. Police say two people were fatally stabbed and several others wounded in Malmesbury near Cape Town. Police fatally shot the lone attacker after he charged at officers. Police say they are investigating and did not discuss possible motives. The attack occurred at the end of Ramadan, Islam's month of fasting and reflection. On May 10th, attackers killed a mosque leader and injured two other people at a mosque in the town of Verulam on the outskirts of the eastern port city of Durban. No arrests have been made. About 1.5% of South Africa's 55 million people are Muslim.
Muslims around the world are preparing to celebrate Eid al-Fitr after the Ramadan fast. Muslim clerics are calling on the faithful to retain the virtues gained during the holy month. Gift Aguiriga reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
Eid falls on the first day of the month of Shawwal. The aim of this feast is to be grateful for the successful completion of the month-long Ramadan fast. In Nigeria, Muslims are in high spirits, ready for the celebration, which is also called Salah in Arabic. The Nigerian government has already declared Friday and Monday public holidays to enable Muslims to mark the occasion. Tamim Yusuf, an imam in Abuja, says there are lessons every Muslim can learn from the just-concluded Ramadan.
Ramadan is a complete school that changes, that molds one's behavior from bad to good, from good to better. It teaches us so many lessons, both spiritual, social, economic, and what have you. Ramadan elevates one level of iman so that he be closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Ramadan teaches us sincerity, which we are expected to be sincere and patriotic towards our nation.
Yusuf called on Muslims to live a life of sacrifice, charity and love for one another. Some Muslims expressed their happiness and their gratitude to Allah for seeing them through another Ramadan fast. Zakaria Osman was dressed in white jalabiya with a cap to fit called tagia in Arabic, and he was seated in his brother's shop who sells groceries. And additional MA was wearing a white shirt with a pair of pants, beaming with smiles.
Alhamdulillah, so far we have learned more from the Ramadan. As Salah is coming, inshallah, I want to celebrate the Salah with people in harmony, generously, with happiness, inshallah.
My preparation for the forthcoming Eid al-Fitr, alhamdulillah, we thank God for everything, for good health, which is very paramount in the life of human being. But in terms of economy, everybody knows that things are very, very tough.
Despite the economic hardship the country is experiencing, there is no doubt that Muslims in Nigeria are prepared to celebrate this holy feast.
Allah the Almighty, Allahu Allah, protect me and guide me, Allahu Allah, oh, to your love and...
Eid Mubarak to Muslims around the world. For VOA, this is Gift Aguiriga from Abuja.
An international human rights group says tens of thousands of pregnant girls and adolescent mothers are banned or discouraged from attending school across Africa. Human Rights Watch examines the issue in a 40-page report released today ahead of the Day of the African Child on June 16th. From the Kenyan capital, Ruben Chama reports.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi, representatives from the New York-based human rights group said many African governments have made strong commitments in recent years to ensure that pregnant girls and young mothers can attend school. However, countries such as Equatorial Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Tanzania still ban pregnant girls or adolescent mothers from government schools. Eileen Martinez is children's rights researcher at Human Rights Watch and the author of the report.
We feel that it's very important to highlight what's happening to adolescent mothers in education because they are a highly invisible group in government policies. This is despite the fact that actually Africa has the highest teenage fertility rates in the world, and yet governments have in some cases managed to ensure that they include pregnant girls in their analysis. But in many cases, we have found that this is lacking and many governments are actually simply not including the needs of adolescent mothers.
The report provides the first comprehensive analysis of laws, policies and practices across all African Union member states that support or block adolescent girls' schooling during pregnancy and motherhood. It finds that Tanzania is among a handful of African countries that officially discriminate against young mothers as state policy. Many more countries opt to keep adolescent mothers in school, although implementation of their laws and policies frequently falls short, and monitoring of adolescent mothers' re-entry to education remains weak overall. Terry Otieno, the national coordinator of the Forum for African Women Educationalists, FAWE, Kenya chapter, explains.
One of the challenges that we have really experienced is lack of the policy enforcement. You realize that, yes, the policy is there. The schools are supposed to implement it. There's no legal enforcement whereby when a teacher has forcefully sent a girl child out of the school, what should happen to the teacher? There's nothing in the policy that says that this teacher should be arrested or this teacher should be done this. There should be a line in the policy or a sentence in the policy that emphasizes that in case this happens, these are the repercussions.
Every year, thousands of school-age African girls become pregnant. Girls from poor and more marginalized households and communities are among the most affected. Christine Nduku is a teenage mother who resides in one of Nairobi's informal settlements. She says life has never been the same since she became pregnant and gave birth to her first child while in school.
Nilipata mtoto 2016, nikiwa na 16 years, na nilikonga primary class 8. Siku malizianga juu nilipatanga nikiwa iyo class 8.
She says, I became pregnant in 2016, aged 16 years, while doing my final year in primary school. I had to drop out of school to become a mother. I was unable to finish school. My mother is an unemployed single mother, so we just struggle to raise the child.
Niko na single mother, najiwezi na kazi, na struggling tu na mtoto.
Martinez advises African governments to urgently adopt laws and policies to ensure that schools allow and support pregnant girls to stay in school and to return to school after having a child.
One of the recommendations that we have included is that governments produce far more accurate data so that they can also understand the immensity of the challenge and how many girls are being deprived of their education, but also on the positive side, how many of them are actually staying in school as a result of good policies.
In Kenya, the government's policies prescribe that adolescent mothers should go back to school, but many girls face financial and social barriers to return. In some areas, school officials do not always follow the policies, and communities and pregnant girls are not always aware that adolescent mothers are welcome in school. This is Ruben Chama reporting for VOA in Nairobi.
16 minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi has a new cabinet placing allies in key posts. The new cabinet was sworn in today. General Mohammed Ahmed Zaki Mohammed, the head of the Republican Guard, has become defense minister. General Mahmoud Tawfik, who had led national security forces, will be interior minister. Mohammed Ahmed Mohammed Maid, who has served in various ministries, takes on the key role of finance minister. Egyptian authorities are implementing an economic reform program tied to $12 billion in loans from International Monetary Fund issued in 2016. Sisi, who came to power in 2013 after ousting the nation's only civilian elected president, won re-election in March in a race in with no significant opposition. Critics say he was squashed most dissent and imprisoned thousands of rights activists, journalists, and opponents. Egypt faces a number of problems, including a battered economy and a significant threat from militant attacks.
Democracy is at work in Zimbabwe. The country goes to the polls on July 30th, and thousands of citizens are expressing interest in running for public office. From Harare, reporter Kuzaisa Nawashi has the report.
Job Sikala is a member of the main opposition alliance, MDCT Alliance, and will be running for the Member of Parliament post in Zengeza West constituents. He describes how individuals can register as candidates.
Today is just the process whereby aspiring candidates are filing their papers with the nomination court. If your papers are filed off record and you will only be waiting for the pronouncement by the presiding officer whether your filing has been successful or not.
One's application may not be successful if they have a criminal record or submit incomplete documents or even fail to pay the required fee at the nomination court. Sikala adds that all candidates should know their verdict by the end of the day. Tendai Ndoro is an independent aspiring member of parliament for Hatfield in Harare. She says the process has not been smooth.
The process is chaotic, it's hectic, but it's a process. Crowded. I think we need to do better.
Douglas Monzora is the Secretary General of the main opposition party, MDC, and a member of the main opposition alliance. He says the Electoral Commission has not made a voter's roll available, as is required by law. The board had assured a delegation of international observers that the rolls would be made available to opposition parties as a matter of urgency.
The main issue is that we have not been availed the voter's roll up to this point in time. It would have been prudent to have the voter's roll given before nomination. But the ZEC says that they are going to give us the voter's roll after nomination.
Zimbabwe recently compiled a new voter's roll, and any aspiring candidate needs to be nominated by registered voters. This is one of the many reasons political players needed the voters' roll prior to the nomination court. Munyara Zidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliamentary business and other political developments. They have been closely following the nominations. He says there is some division in the opposition, with many well-known politicians deciding not to join a grand alliance to defeat the ruling party.
So it's interesting that MDC has filed under the alliance. Joyce Mujuru is standing alone. Elton Mangoma is standing alone. And also Priscilla Musiya-Irambu has filed nomination papers on behalf of Thokozani Kube. Now you have all these political parties who could form a grand coalition but are choosing to go at it alone, and it's unfortunate.
Campaigning for office will intensify in the coming weeks. Observers say that past elections have experienced violence, but so far, the run-up to the July polls has been fairly peaceful. They say the stakes are high. Voters will either re-elect the ruling party and its presidential candidate, or break nearly 40 years of dominance by the party that established independence. ZANU PF. For VOA, this is Kudzaisa Nawashe from Harare.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari this month said the country is moving its annual Democracy Day to June 12th instead of May 29th. The move recognizes the June 12, 1993 election, considered one of the fairest in the nation's history. But the military government refused to accept the results and the winner. Mahmoud Kassimawa Abiola was never allowed to take office. Abiola died in jail in 1998. Reporter Mike Mbonye in Nigeria spoke with political analyst about Buhari's decision and about the status of Nigeria's democracy 25 years later. Race Achara is a professor of constitutional law in Enugu, southeast Nigeria. He likes the date change.
It is something that has been in the minds of our people, and I do not think that there's a problem if after 25 years of error, there's some attempt to correct the error.
Although Nigeria has had elected presidents since 1999, Achara notes that its democracy still has weaknesses and the democratic infrastructure needs to be shored up.
The point about things is that we should get to a point where we realize that nations are built on institutions. And if we've been doing things wrongly before and we do them right, there's nothing wrong with it and we should encourage it.
For much of Nigeria's history as an independent nation, the military ruled. Legborsi Tony Francis is a Port Harcourt lawyer and public affairs analyst, and she says there are some in the country who look fondly on the years when generals were in charge.
From experience, it would appear that the military, the way they were going about things, the discipline they instilled in the populace was better than what is happening now. However, the general notion is that the worst civilian administration is better than any military rule. That is because of the dictatorial tendencies of military rule.
She says corruption is among the country's biggest problems and hampers both economic development and support for civilian leadership. Even so, she says Nigeria has something to offer Africa in terms of democratic development.
So on this note, I would feel that some African countries would not want to toe the steps of Nigeria. But on the other hand, like, I'm viewing it from both sides. But my definite stand is that Nigeria is definitely showing the African countries, some African countries, the pathway, at least the fact that they have stood as a common entity despite the challenges they have faced all these years.
Race Achara and Legborsi Tony Francis spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye in Nigeria for VOA.
Infanticide is the second most important cause of female incarceration in Senegal. Rights groups who have raised concern over the conditions of women's detention blame the country's restrictive laws on abortion. Many are calling on the government to loosen its legislation. In the western region of TC, Sophia Christensen reports on the issue through the story of a former convict.
Aminata, a name she chose to hide her true identity, was asleep with her two youngest children when the police came to her home in the town of Mbour in the middle of the night. She had given birth 2 days earlier, and a neighbor had seen her bury the baby. Aminata claims it was stillborn. She says she was impregnated by a cousin who took advantage of her situation after she lost her husband and moved to Mbour to find work. I did not want the baby, she says. Aminata was arrested on the spot and served 4 years in prison for infanticide, 1 year shorter than the typical sentence. She was released in 2015. After drug-related offences, infanticide is the biggest cause of female incarceration in Senegal. Rights groups estimated that in 2015, almost 1 in 5 women were arrested on charges of infanticide. In the Test Detention Centre, where Aminata served her time, this figure nears 30%. Joseph Fay is a lawyer for the Senegal Human Rights League, a local partner of the Paris-based International Federation of Human Rights, which, among other things, advocates for legalized abortion around the world.
Le crime d'infanticide est souvent la conséquence de situations de discrimination.
He says female prisons are overpopulated and that the country's strict abortion laws are largely to blame. Senegal is one of 10 countries in Africa where abortion is prohibited in all circumstances. There are strong feelings against abortion in Senegal, both in society and at the government level. In a nation that is 96% Muslim, imams speak out forcefully against the practice. Women's rights advocates say there is also the cultural perception that allowing women to have abortions on demand will encourage them to be promiscuous. Women in Senegal can legally terminate their pregnancies if three doctors certify that her life is at risk, a task activists say is almost impossible to complete within the abortion time limit. In the female quarter of the Thiès Detention Centre, women chat quietly amongst themselves as they embroider tablecloths and napkins. Prison officials say there are never more than 30 detainees at one time, but both rights groups and former convicts claim the real number is higher. Aminata recalls sharing a cell with more than 60 others. The United Nations has taken issue with the conditions of women's detention. In a 2015 report, the world body says Senegal's prisons are not adapted to women, with no facilities to handle pregnancies or accommodate children. Awa Tunkera works for the Association of Senegalese Women Lawyers, an organization advocating the legalization of abortion in cases of rape and incest, or when a woman's health is at risk. Considering the role they play in society, there really shouldn't be any woman in jail, says Tunkera. She says her association is pushing the government to consider alternative penalties that would allow women to serve their sentences outside prison. This would be better for their families and for the education of their children, she adds. Aminata was not allowed to take her children to prison. They were collected by her eldest daughter and taken back to their native village, where they stayed until her release. Shunned by her family, Aminata now lives in a corrugated iron shed on her elder brother's mango plantation, 12 kilometers from Mbour. Aissatou Kébé is a program manager for Toastan, a Dakar-based NGO that helps reintegrate former detainees. Being arrested for infanticide is something that will continue to haunt you for the rest of your life, she says. These women are rejected by their families and rejected by society. But Kébé does not think loosening abortion laws would have a significant impact. Many women are illiterate, says Kébé. They would not even think there could be an alternative to giving birth and smothering the baby. She is pushing for more access to contraceptives as a solution. Family Planning 2020 says fewer than 16% of women in Senegal were using a modern method of contraception last year. Aminata believes her fate would have been different had she had more options. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Thiès.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports.
We will rock you.
Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to The Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on The Voice of America.
Voice of America!
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to The Sunny Side of Sports. The 2018 World Cup Football Tournament officially kicked off Thursday in Moscow, Russia. In the opening match of the month-long football festival, Russia is hosting Saudi Arabia at the 80,000-seat Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow. And right now, we're in the 70th minute, and the Russians lead the Saudis 2-0. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Yuri Gazinski. Gazinski gets the first goal of Russia 2018. He scored on a header in the 12th minute. Denis Cheryshev doubled the lead for the Russians just before the break. Once again, we're in the 71st minute. The Russians just scored again. Russia 3, Saudi Arabia 0. The Russians back on the board. Russia looks like they're headed for victory in the opening match of the World Cup. The stadium at Luzhniki, it looks at full capacity this evening. Luzhniki will also host the World Cup final on July 15th. Now, Russia-Saudi Arabia is a matchup of the two lowest-ranked teams in the 32-nation World Cup. The Russians are number 70 in the June FIFA rankings, while the Saudis are at number 67. Just before the match kicked off outside Luzhniki Stadium, these two Saudi fans both predicted victory for their team.
Tonight, I think we will win this game because we have a great team. And I think we will win 3-0.
I think it's a good achievement to play on a, you know, international level. The whole world is watching. And we're going to prove that we can play some soccer. My prediction will be 2-1, and we will win. I told the players to play very well. I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, here's a laughing matter. Those Saudis, that first Saudi we heard, said the Saudis were going to win 3-0. Why don't we flip it? Right now, Russia leads Saudi Arabia 3-0. The Saudis are not going to win this match, sports fans. Russia headed to victory in the opening match of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. Russia 3, Saudi Arabia 0. We're in the 72nd minute. The Russians, it looks like they're headed to their first victory at the World Cup in 16 years. For our VOA World Cup fans keeping score, Russia defeated Tunisia 2-0 at the 2002 World Cup in Kobe, Japan. The Carthage Eagles of Tunisia also qualified for the 2018 World Cup. The Tunisians take on England June 18th in their opening match in Volgograd, Russia. Now, Tunisia is one of five African teams competing at Russia 2018. The four others are the Pharaohs of Egypt, the Atlas Lions of Morocco, the Super Eagles of Nigeria, and the Lions of Taronga of Senegal. The Egyptians and the Moroccans will be the first two African teams in action on Friday. Egypt will play Uruguay in Ekaterinburg, Russia, and Morocco will meet Iran in St. Petersburg, Russia. Egypt's Argentine head coach, Hector Cooper, was quoted on Thursday saying his star Liverpool striker, Mohamed Salah, is almost 100% certain to play against Uruguay. That would certainly be a big birthday present for Mo Salah, who, yes, Mighty Mo is going to celebrate his 26th birthday on Friday. Salah has not played since injuring shoulder ligaments during Liverpool's UEFA Champions League final defeat by Real Madrid on May 26th. Egyptian coach Cooper adds this about Salah, and I quote, "He could become the top goal scorer in Russia and one of the greatest players. He's doing very well and has recovered very, very quickly." Birthday boy Mohamed Salah and the Egyptians will be taking on an Uruguay team that finished second to Brazil in South America's World Cup qualifying competition. Uruguay also features the dynamic scoring duo of Paris Saint-Germain's Edinson Cavani and Barcelona's Luis Suarez. Suarez and Cavani arrived at Uruguay's World Cup training camp after posting a combined 71 goals in 99 matches across all competitions for their trophy-winning clubs this past season. And how's this for a dynamic partnership, VOA World Cup fans? Cavani and Suarez's joint international portfolio is approaching 100 career goals. My VOA colleague Gwen Uten will have more on Egyptian star Mohamed Salah. But first, Gwen has an update on World Cup security. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Happy World Cup, sports fans. So listen, if you're suddenly thinking about heading over to Russia to be part of the action, you need to know security is tight. Army trucks arrived in Moscow on Thursday to join the security forces that are already in place. Thousands of police have been deployed in all 11 host cities, and they are ready to deal with rowdy spectators and security threats. Extra police are on patrol in metro stations as thousands upon thousands of soccer fans poured into Russia ahead of Thursday's opening match. Russian President Vladimir Putin promises that this year's World Cup will be an unforgettable and vibrant one. On Wednesday, Putin spoke in Moscow at a FIFA Congress and called the tournament the creme de la creme of global football. Putin also thanked FIFA for their dedication in keeping politics out of sport. FIFA President Gianni Infantino expressed his gratitude to the Russian president for hosting the World Cup in his country.
From the bottom of our heart, a big, big, big thank you to you, Mr. Putin, for your engagement, for your passion, for making us really feel part of the same team. To your government, to the local organizing committee, to the Russian Football Union, to all the volunteers in Russia, and to all the 150 or more million Russian people who are welcoming the world here in the next months. Thank you for being here. Спасибо. And I see you very soon. Thank you very much.
Well, World Cup fever continues to heat up. A sea of spectators from around the globe have gathered in Moscow with their nation's flags in tow and team jerseys on full display. This year's World Cup heavily features national teams from the Middle East and Latin America. And this Costa Rican soccer fan arrived way ahead of her nation's match against Serbia on Sunday.
All the people, like, we like everyone here from people all over the world. So, yeah, we're happy to be here.
And this Australian soccer fan brought a few Aussies along.
So we're here with the tour group of about 90 Australians. So it's, yeah, staying a little bit out of the city. So we've been just doing the touristing for a few days. Yeah, absolutely love it though. It's a really cool town. Like, you got the Kremlin, that type of stuff, a lot of history. And also, like, the vibe of the World Cup's pretty cool as well.
Australia will face France on Saturday. The Egyptian team arrived at their hotel in Ekaterinburg ahead of their Friday opener against Uruguay, and Egyptian fans were there before dawn to welcome their home team.
I came over here in Ekaterinburg at 5 o'clock in the morning. It was total 44 hours flight. It took me 44 hours to come over here. And I'm here for the team, and we're going to be very loud in the stadium on Friday.
Mohamed Salah emerged from the bus to the sound of cheering fans who were no doubt relieved he made it to the World Cup at all. In May, Salah left the field in tears after a shoulder injury forced him out of the final match of the UEFA Champions League, and Egypt held its collective breath as his World Cup appearance was thrown into question. Yet, throughout his recovery, Salah stayed connected to his legion of fans, assuring them he would be ready for the cup. Last week, he posted a picture of himself performing a shoulder exercise and wrote, "Good feelings." Outside the Russian hotel, this fan said the strength of his nation is with Mo Salah and the entire Egyptian team.
We got a very good chance. We're all hoping that Salah will be fit to play. And if he doesn't, we've got 100 million behind the team.
Mo Salah! Mo Salah! Mo Salah!
This year marks Egypt's first appearance in the World Cup since 1990. And do you remember this sound? Ah, the sound of South Africa 2010, still ringing in the ears of those who were there. Well, make way for Russia 2018 and the Spoons of Victory. The Spoons, or Loshkas in Russian, will be stirring the crowd in 11 host cities over the next month. Designers had a choice between three instruments, a clapper, a shaker, and a spoon. In the end, the spoon triumphed as a true reflection of Russian culture and for its gentler, less disturbing sound than, say, the vuvuzela or the Brazilian caxarula, featured prominently in Brazil 2014. The spoons come in a variety of colors and patterns and are traditionally made of wood. However, a special plastic version is available for the less skillful among us. Let's hear it for the official instrument of the World Cup! Back to you, Sonny.
Stir it up, Gwen. Stir it up. Stirring up those spoons and stirring up some World Cup news for us. That's my Voice of America colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to a special World Cup edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Host Russia is heading to victory in the opening match of the 2018 World Cup football tournament. The Russians lead Saudi Arabia 3-0 in the 82nd minute at Luzhniki Stadium. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute. Another one to Yuri Gazinski. He scored the first goal of Russia 2018 on a header in the 12th minute. Denis Cheryshev doubled the lead for the Russians in the 43rd minute. And Alan Zagaev, a substitute, came on. Artem Zuba, let me get the name right. Artem Zuba came on in the second half as a substitute. He scored in the 71st minute. So once again, it's Russia 3, Saudi Arabia 0. We're in the 83rd minute. The Russians, the host Russians, are going to win the opening match of the 2018 World Cup. Coca-Cola is one of the official sponsors of the 2018 World Cup in Russia. And Coca-Cola's official World Cup song is Colors by American singer Jason Derulo. Let's give it a listen.
Oh, what a feeling. Look what we've overcome. Oh, I'm gonna wave away my flag and count all the reasons. We are the champions. There ain't no turning back. Saying, oh, 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 can't you taste the feeling? Saying, oh, 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 we all together singing. Look how far we come now. Ready to people, a new day has just begun, and I wear my colors on my back.
Celebrate.
Yeah. We created equal, one race and that's human. Can't wait till they all see that. Saying,
Let's go.
jump for your colors. Represent your country, raise your flag, show your true colors.
That's Colors by American singer Jason Derulo, Coca-Cola's official 2018 World Cup song. The anthem is described as a rallying cry for fans around the world to embrace their colors, a concept that extends beyond country flags and team jerseys. The 28-year-old Derulo says the song basically wrote itself. Jason says Colors is about champions, but also about the state of the world. Derulo says he wanted to create something international that fans around the world can enjoy. And Jason adds this about the sound of the song. He says it has an island vibe, it has African rhythms, and it has a Latin influence with guitar. Jason says he wanted to mesh all those vibes together so everyone can feel like it's their sound. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to a special World Cup edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Host Russia headed for victory in the opening match of the 2018 World Cup. Right now, we're just a couple of minutes from the final whistle. The Russians lead Saudi Arabia 3-0. The goal scorers, Gazinski, Yuri Gazinski with the first goal of the World Cup in the 12th minute. Denis Cheryshev and Zhuba, a substitute in the 71st minute. Russia headed for victory in the opening match of the 2018 World Cup. The Super Eagles of Nigeria will play Croatia Saturday in their opening World Cup match in Kaliningrad, Russia. Former goalkeeper David Ngodiga captained the Super Eagles in 1988 and 1989. David also trained the goalkeepers for Nigeria's bronze medal winning team at the 2014 Rio Olympics in Brazil. Now, Nigeria has three goalkeepers in Russia, Ikechukwu Ezenwa, Daniel Akpeyi, and Francis Uzoho. Reporter Iron Mike Mbonye asked David Ngodiga about the quality of Nigeria's World Cup goalkeepers.
Well, the apprehension is everywhere. It's not that when you have a country that has been producing goalkeepers at that level that people can rely on. I can understand that apprehension and so on. Looking at the goalkeepers we have, they are the ones we have as at now, and they are the ones that have been used consistently. So it will be difficult now to start bringing in any other goalkeeper. Though some of us are of the school of thought that no matter what, Yama should have been called back because of his wealth of experience and for the fact that he has that exposure and so on. But when you want to look at it also too, we expect that the goalkeepers we have now can rise up to the occasion. Because Yamato also started with an opportunity like this when the other goalkeepers were dropped in Korea, Japan. And he took that chance and he has become who he is today, not only in Nigerian football, in African football and in world football.
Some analysts think that Inyama's inability to make the national team is the fact that he's not been in action for his French club for some time. What's your reaction to this?
Well, to me, I don't look at it that way, in as much as I'm not trying to maybe criticize the technical crew for that and so on. I felt that the goalkeeper trainer that was sent to Izo should have been sent to Iyama if we really wanted his service. Look at 1990. The Cameroonian team, they were having a problem with scoring goals before the World Cup, if you remember. They went to the Nations Cup and they got knocked out by Senegal. It was a very poor performance and everybody in Africa was crying that, come on, do you think we are going to have better representatives? What did the coach do, the Russian coach? He went and brought back Reggie Miller from retirement. And that was the turning point that the team needed. And they went to Italia 90. And Reggie Miller proved himself to tomorrow. So we felt that, with the experience Yama has gotten and so on, even as at the time he had that injury, it would have been the time we have given him that support, knowing that Kali Keme is not readily available because of his illness. But that said and done, they did not do that and so on. But the ones we have now, in camp now, they are the ones that have been used regularly. So we expect that at least they will rise up to the occasion. because there is this Nigerian spirit that you have in our players. The result might not be too encouraging in the last few friendly games and so on, but I think with the match against Croatia, it will determine how far we'll go, because well begun is half done.
Looking beyond the Russia 2018 World Cup and looking at the goalkeepers we have in camp, or the crop of goalkeepers we have, what would be advice to the handlers of the national team on how to improve their standard?
Well, we have to start looking for goalkeepers. That's the truth of it. You remember when we were preparing for the Olympic Games and being part of that technical crew and so on, people were surprised where Emmanuel Daniel came out from. He came out from the league. And Emmanuel Daniel did that extremely very well for us. And when it was even time to get an overage player, we took Daniel Akpeyi, considering a lot of issues. That is still the Dele Alepanso. He's a good goalkeeper, no doubt. You know, I know he's a young one coming up. So we should start looking at all these goalkeepers now so that there will be better competition to bring out the best in them. We made this mistake somehow. We are relying solely on Carly Kemme. Why we did not have, I will not use the word capable, I will say we did not have well experienced and exposed assistant for him. And when that opportunity came, Ezewa took it up. He did extremely well during the qualifiers. Unfortunately, he too had an injury. And there was that kind of tension. So where are we going to get goalkeeper for the World Cup? And the young chap from Spain came up and so on. Good goalkeeper, I know that. He's a very young goalkeeper. I know that with the few matches he has played, some experience would have come. But yet not all in the World Cup standard. Talking about the World Cup standard. But he can also rise up to the occasion and carve a niche for himself.
That's David Ngadiga, the former captain and goalkeeper of Nigeria's national football team, the Super Eagles. And David was talking with reporter Iron Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to a special World Cup edition of the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We're in the final seconds of play in Moscow, and host Russia headed for a very convincing 4-0 victory over Saudi Arabia in the opening match of the 2018 World Cup. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports shout out to two Russians. Yuri Gazinski scored the very first goal of Russia 2018 in the 12th minute. Denis Cheryshev, two goals for the Russians in their opener. We're in the final seconds of play. Host Russia going to win the opening match of the World Cup 4-0 over Saudi Arabia in the first match of the World Cup. So the Russians, this will be their first World Cup victory in 16 years. And it looks like the Russians have just scored another goal. I'm going to go with a final score from Moscow. 5-0 Russia. 5-0, Russia wins the opening match of the World Cup. If I'm wrong, I'll be back at 18:30 with an update. And that wraps up a special June 14th World Cup edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer Wojciech Zorniak, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On May 8th, health officials in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, reported two confirmed cases of Ebola in the country's northwest. It is the DRC's ninth outbreak of the disease since the discovery of the virus near the country's Ebola River, and the second since the largest ever Ebola epidemic swept across West Africa from 2014 to 2015. Ebola is a viral hemorrhagic fever with average mortality rates ranging from 25 to 90%, depending on the specific strain. According to the World Health Organization, by the end of December 2015, the epidemic that devastated West Africa sickened 28,616 people and killed 11,310 across 10 countries. Ebola is a disease of the thick forest, where people and wild animals exist in close proximity. Here, people are more likely to eat bushmeat or wild-caught game that may be infected with the disease. That is one of the reasons why Ebola is endemic in the DRC, meaning it is always present there at some level. Since the earliest cases of this outbreak were reported in the DRC's forested region of Bikoro, they have spread to Mbandaka, a major port city. There is now a possibility that the infection could travel down the Congo River to more densely populated areas, such as Kinshasa, the capital, with its population of 10 million. On May 22nd, U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Alex Azar announced that the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, will contribute up to $7 million at this stage to combat the Ebola outbreak in the DRC. This is in addition to the $1 million USAID committed a few days earlier to help prevent the spread of this deadly disease. The United States is also sending a team of public health experts to join the efforts of the Ministry of Health of the DRC, the World Health Organization, and other partners. At the same time, we call on the global community to make funding available immediately to support the government of the DRC and the World Health Organization's Health Emergencies Fund, the Contingency Fund for Emergencies, in order to contain the outbreak as soon as possible before it spreads further and harms more people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Our topic will be men's grooming. This is next Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Liz Palka reporting. China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi urged the United States to make a wise decision on trade Thursday. This as the Trump administration prepares to release a list of tariffs targeting $50 billion in Chinese goods. Speaking at a news briefing Thursday, flanked by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, the Chinese government's top diplomat said, quote, we are now facing two options. One is cooperation and win-win. The other is confrontation and lose-lose. We have chosen the first one, and we hope the U.S. will make the same wise choice. Wang urged the United States to not take any unilateral steps that would create obstacles for future negotiations. Secretary Pompeo Pompeo was in Asia following Tuesday's summit in Singapore between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. After meetings with South Korean and Japanese officials in Seoul, Pompeo traveled to Beijing. Wang said China is ready to play a constructive role in North Korea's denuclearization process. Pompeo said he felt satisfied with China's commitment to the conditions.
China has reaffirmed its commitment to honoring the UN Security Council resolutions. Those have mechanisms for relief contained in them, and we agreed that at the appropriate time,